Anybody ever heard of Elmer? Just said it wrong. Elma? You ever heard of Elma? It's an error, like an automatic error checker thing. I just found this. Somebody calls it Elmer. It's Elma plus Signalar. And they've got like a thing on here that you can throw exceptions. And then see them happen in real time. So you go to elmer.apphp.com. I thought that was kind of neat. So if you use Elma, you could couple it with Signalar and see here, you'd have your own little error monitor right there and see what's going on. I thought that might be kind of neat. So luck of the draw, it happened to pop up just before I got up on stage, but I wanted to show you guys that because it's one of my favorite topics. But one of my other favorite topics is ASP.NET Web API. I love to talk about building service walls. I used to talk about it with WCF a lot. And now that Web API is out, I get to talk about it in Web API. So it's a topic near and dear to my heart. How many of you have had to write a service layer or a service wall for your applications for whatever reason, some sort of API that your apps can talk to? It's a lot easier. So you probably understand why you'd want to do that. Why is there so much hype around building web APIs? Because people have multiple types of devices, your phones, et cetera, et cetera. We want to provide access between one application and another through some sort of an API that can not only be easily documentable, but easily useful. That's a good way to talk about it. What we're going to talk about during this is why it's so cool, why you want to do it, and how to do it, and then how to do it for non-browser clients. And I don't have this on the agenda slide, but we're also going to talk about an alternative way to host ASP.NET Web API. So you already know this. If you want to talk to multiple clients, you have to use something other than HTML. Unless you want, for whatever reason, to ask your consumers to do a lot of screen scraping, but that's really fun, right? We don't want to do screen scraping. So I'm going to show you how to do that during this talk. Web API is now a part of ASP.NET. So it's in the one ASP.NET blanket. How many of you tried it out when it was WCF Web API? Anybody? Did you enjoy it? Was it fun? Fun programming model? Cool. It's a lot easier, I think. But it's all wrapped in now, and you'll see that on top of MVC or within the MVC box, I've placed Web API because, as Matthew may have mentioned, it's kind of a part of the MVC area. And then above that, you'll see we've got its interface is going to be code. It's going to be some form of markup or some sort of code that that any device will know how to read. So here's how you get it if you don't already have it. If you've got Visual Studio 11 installed, you probably already got it. If you don't, you can grab it from ASP.NET Web API. Let me start this real quick. So you can basically just get it for free, just like WebMatrix and a lot of our other stuff. You can download it and go ahead and start coding up your own APIs. You can also find it and some extensions for it on NuGet. NuGet pops up a lot today. I'm sure that's been pointed out. But that's because that's how we like to distribute stuff. It's our package management tool. So you can download other stuff like an OData extension. And then, as you'll learn in a moment, Web API supports the ability for you to customize the output, called output formatters. So you can actually write an output formatter that spits out ASCII text or a CSV file of your data. You, Glenn Block, the guy that kind of, I think he sort of started this project or was a big contributor to it when it was WCF Web API, he actually has one that will output in PNG format. So it'll grab images and throw them out in PNG format. So output formatters give you a lot more flexibility. Why would you want to build a read-only API? What's good about read-only? You don't want to allow people the ability to access your data from a write perspective if you just want to get the stuff out there. Twitter is a great example of a primarily read-only API. Unless you're authenticated, then you can make posts to it and everything. But lots of different tools out there use the Twitter API just to pull tweets and show them on blogs, show them on your site, that kind of thing. There's even a consumer for the Twitter API built into one of the web metrics helpers. So here's a sample. Up at the top, we've got a model, just like you're familiar to with MVC, like Matthew just talked about. So we've got a person model. And then we have a person controller. For all intents and purposes, the API controller and the MVC controller are almost identical in terms of their form and functionality and also how they're routed. There's a couple of slight variants, and we'll talk about that during this conversation. One of those is you don't just inherit from controller. You inherit from API controller. That's why it's highlighted up here. So you would inherit from that controller to be able to give your controller the ability to send out API commands. So just want to point that out. One of the other things that's kind of discussed a lot is that, like, let's say you want to have a set of functionality for people and a set of functionality for a person in terms of your URL, you would want to make two different controllers. You'd want to make people controller and person controller. Just going to point that out. That way, if the URL is important to you, it probably should be given REST and everything, you might want to think about that. So when you start to design your system, you might want to have some functionality in one controller and some in another. You're going to end up having small controllers that are more easily maintainable, but that's kind of what we want anyway, right? Any questions about that? Cool. Oh, second part of this slide is the constructor, and this is an example that we'll kind of go deeper into in just a second. Just during the CTOR, I create a list of person objects and add them to a list, and it's just going to be stored directly in memory. Anybody pick up on the theme? You guys know who these people are? Please? All right, cool. I'm not going to do any karate or kung fu demonstrations, but just thought it was a nice topic. So read-only controller actions. So before you saw how to create a controller, an API controller, you just inherit from API controller, and then you load it with data. Step three in that, if you want to get everything out of there, you would just put that in get. Now, point out the URL here. When I say get, that means any HTTP get to that URL is going to give you that stuff. You guys have heard of REST? This is kind of a RESTful approach. You basically allow specificity in your URL. So in this case, we want to get one person. In this case, we want to get all people. So that's just sort of how that will end up working. Okay. Routing. There is a slight difference in the way things are going to be routed in Web API than in a normal MVC situation. And I want to point out how to do that right here. First part is you'll see map HTTP route. In the normal MVC syntax, that's obviously map route. So there is that first difference. I think that's about the only difference, quite frankly. First part is you want to put API in front. And what that's doing is it's saying whenever they make a call to /API, I'm going to automatically assume that I'm going to go to an MVC API controller. That's one of the big things we're pointing out here. As before, the controller name is going to be injected next. So you have to have that API in there in this particular circumstance. And then finally, the ID is going to be at the end. All right. Any questions on that? I didn't get any hands earlier when I asked how many people love doing routing. So that's why I want to point this slide out. It is a required step. You can't just expect your API controllers to be routed the way your MVC controllers are routed. That is by design. We wanted to give you the ability to specify how your HTTP services would be routed and then give you the ability to separate that into your HTML controllers. That make sense? All right. Manipulating HTTP responses. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to manipulate the response? Well, that's kind of the idea behind REST. You're going to want to tweak things as you go. You're going to want to make sure that, you know, not only is the client getting back the data that the client expects to get back, but that in this particular circumstance, that the client also gets an HTTP response header. Now, remember, one of the really important aspects of REST-based programming is that HTTP is your friend, and you want to make sure that you're programming with HTTP in mind. And that includes thinking about the request, thinking about the response, thinking about the data that the browser or the client is going to be reading. So in this particular case, what we're doing is got a try-catch block, and I'm asking for one particular person. Now, I'm just going to be lazy here and just do a link call directly without doing any check to see if I got any back. I'd highly encourage that you do a check first, but, you know, we can do try-catch here for simplicity's sake. And then I'm going to return an HTTP response message. It is a generic type of type person. The second argument is the person that I'm returning. And the third is the HTTP status code. Anybody know the HTTP status code for OK? Right, 200. If I had a prize, I'd give it to you. Actually, Matthew took his NuGet stickers, so I would have tossed one out. But so that's just a point to ponder on. Now, what happens if this call fails? That sort of insinuates that we don't have a person with ID 42. If you ask me for 42, I don't have that many fighters that I would talk about, so I'm not going to have one. So what I'm going to do next is return an HTTP response message, again, of type person, and I'm going to pass the HTTP status code of not found. Anybody know the status code for not found? So we got some true geeks in the room. It's awesome. It's good stuff. All right, so 404. We're going to return not found. Does that make sense? Semantically, does that make sense? I asked you for fighter number 42. You're not only going to send me a null value back, you're going to send me a 404 with that null value. I have two ways of knowing that that piece of data was not found in the collection that you're giving me in your API. Make sense? Now, that does not throw your client off. I mean, it would be wise for you to trap those things and to know, hey, if they send me a 404, just go ahead and look at the data and see what the data is. The data is going to be null. Okay? So just to point out how this works, and I'll do all this in a demo, but I want you to see it first, why you would want to manipulate the HTTP response. In this first call, I'm making a call to API person WAC1, and I'm getting back Chuck Norris. I mean, Chuck Norris does have to be in the number one spot, right? Okay. So we're going to make a call to one, and we're going to get back Chuck. An unsuccessful call, however, in this case, I'm asking for fighter number 6, and you'll see that my response is a 404, and that in my response body, I've got null. So when it works, I've got 200, and data in what format? JSON. And then in this case, I get a 404 with null. Semantically, that sort of makes sense, right? Any questions on that at this point? When I first saw the whole manipulate your HTTP response, I thought, well, that seems a little dangerous. When you think about it in these terms, it kind of makes sense. It's a 404 for the data that you didn't find in your API. I mean, you can kind of split hairs on it, but so building a read-only web API. So what I'll do here is I'll kind of cycle through some of the code that we just looked at, but it'll make a little bit more sense when you actually see it work. So there's our person model. And then I've got the person controller. And just to point out the routing, you'll see that I've got two different route sets. This is the route set that you probably know and love already. This is the one that looks a little bit unfamiliar, just because of that particular word. Okay? For all intents and purposes, it's kind of the same thing, but just a slight variation. The idea is when you're making REST calls or when you want to expose an API to be RESTful, you want to be able to specify the route template pretty explicitly. So that's why we do it that way. Now, by default, I didn't change this. Out of the box, this is what you get when you do file, new project, and MVC project. So, any questions? Cool. Going to go back to the controller here. And you'll see that right here, I've just got a list of people. And in my CTOR, I'm going to do something a little bit different. I'm not just going to declare a random list. I'm actually going to cast that list into the ACTP context. Is this a recommendation? Of course not. Because as soon as somebody bounces the server, or as soon as the app pool recycles itself, you've lost your data. It's only good if you want to share data across clients for a limited amount of time. It's also good for performance reasons. Anybody ever use the cache in ASP.NET? Good. More should. It's really hot. You should totally use it. Makes your sites a lot faster. So I declare a new list of people. And then I just add my people to it. And in this case, I just set my cached object equal to that list. And then finally, I set the people instance equal to whatever's in the cache. You guys notice a pattern there? So when the CTOR runs, it's sort of like isPostBac. Remember isPostBac? First time it runs, it'll load up the cache. Second time it runs, it won't load up the cache. Either way, when it gets the object, it's getting the object out of cache because it figures it's going to be there. All right. Now, the get method, I'm returning as queryable. Why would I want to return as queryable there? Anybody ever heard of OData? Cool. All you have to do to support OData is to return iQueryable, not iEnumerable. Now, what I don't understand, and I've tried this 100 times today, and I can't figure this out. Anybody use LinkPad? You ever heard of LinkPad? Helps you write your link queries. I've used LinkPad on this API, and it keeps like saying bad request. So there's got to be something else I need to do, and I haven't tweaked it yet. But I know that this is how you would basically give out stuff to be queryable by OData, and I'll show you some URL examples of that in just a minute. So that's how we get all people back. And then you've seen this code in the slides. First thing we do, we grab the first person that matches. I'm going to write that out to the console window just for my own merit so I can see it on the screen. And then we're going to return 200 and the person because we found somebody. If not, then we're going to do a 400, and you see the different arguments here. And this argument, it says, I want you to return a person, your data, first. And then there's 9. Or I could just return the status code itself. Or I could return both, in which case I'm doing here. Just want to point that out. Okay. And what I'll do at this point is I'll run this. And I've got that test guy in there, so I'll just leave him in there for now. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to use the developer tools. I'm going to show you something that, you know, everybody always says, why use Fiddler? Why use Fiddler too? Fiddler's a great product. I have no problem with Fiddler. It's really awesome for faking requests. It's really awesome for, like, designing your own sort of request. So if you want to get down and do down and dirty, passing a lot of data to an API call, Fiddler might help you better than using this tool. But what I found the other day is I can go over here and do start capturing. Okay? And it's going to start capturing all my network data. So what I'll do is I'll put in the other popular fighter. I'll hit save. And see what happens. I get two calls. I can show you the jQuery for that. You can imagine what's happening is I'm posting with one set of data, and then I'm just getting it back again. But what we want to take a peek at right now is these two requests. This request, I did a post, and if we look at the request body, we'll see that I passed name is Jackie Chan. So that's really the only parameter that I'm passing there. And if I go over here to response body, I don't get anything because I'm not passing anything back. Now, if I go back to the summary view, and I take a look at the get, that's our response body. That's all the fighters that I have in my list now. Okay, so that's the jQuery result that we get back, or the JSON result, excuse me, that we get back. I'll close that for now. And what I'll show you next is the jQuery code that we sort of used to make that work. Since Matthew has done a great job of introducing you to jQuery today and how all of it works, sort of take a deeper dive. So you can see what I do there is I call the load people method. And in this case, I just remove all the people list items that I've got from my unordered list. And then I make a jQuery get call. I actually call /API/person. That's how it's been routed. I don't have to call /get. Get is implied. Why is get implied? Because it's an HTTP get request. So if I just put get there, that's what it's going to call. So the get method gets called on an HTTP get. So I'm going to get back that set of data, my set of fighters. And for each one of those fighters, I'm just going to add them to that unordered list. I'm just going to add them right in. And then I'm going to refocus on the name text box just so the user can just sit there and bang stuff out, hit enter, bang stuff out, hit enter. If I scroll back up here, see the first thing I do when the page loads is to load all those people. And whenever the user clicks the add button, I'm going to post the data. And again, I'm posting it to person. We're going to get back to that in a second, but remember what I just said about the HTTP get call is going to call the get method. What method do you think is going to get called whenever I post data to the server? Post. So I have another method in my controller called post that I post data to. It's so easy, it's difficult, huh? You would never expect us to make something so intuitive, right? Right? Now what I do here is, what data I'm going to be posting is the serialized version of that form. So I'm going to do form name, form ID, what have you, dot serialize. That's a jQuery call. Anybody use that yet? In jQuery, you serialize? I was introduced to it quite recently. What it'll do is it will create the string that's going to get posted to the server on the client. So you can do whatever you want to do to it before you send it over the wire. So in this case, I'm just serializing the string I'm getting ready to post, and then I'm going to post it, but I'm going to post it through jQuery's AJAX calls. And then the callback method basically just clears out the name text box and then loads the people again. All right. So now that you see that, what I will do is go back to the slide deck. We'll continue on a little bit further. Let me move my magnifying glass here. Now, why would you want to make an API updatable? Why on earth would you ever want to do that? So you get users to give you data, right? That makes sense. We don't necessarily want to update the state of the server. We might want to update the contents of the database. But the idea is we want to give people the ability to write data to us through our API. Here's how you do that. And I'm going to go right into it rather than show you this on the screen. And what I'm going to do now is, since we've gone through the jQuery, I'm going to shrink all my code back up. We'll go right here. Again, I do not encourage the use of automatically incrementing your IDs, but for the purpose of a demo, it'll work. What I do is I get back a person. I'm going to just go ahead and make their ID, how many ever I have, plus one. Again, not necessarily a great idea. I'm going to check to see if I have anybody with that ID already, so that if you wanted to force your ID on me, I'm going to say, sorry, that is an HTTP bad request. So I'm just going to go ahead and blow up Again, an example of how you can return HTTP response messages back to the client to notify the client that something has happened. It's kind of like an error popping up in your web browser whenever somebody's site blows up, but it's in an API. And since the response code is in the header, somebody could write code at a very low level to be able to know what to do with that information. People that write code in Java, for instance, really appreciate that because all they need to do is to make API calls or to make HTTP calls, and they have all the data they need directly in their code. PHP is the same way. Any other language. The idea here is speak to everybody. So if we don't blow up there, let me go ahead and hit the right button. If we don't blow up there, then we go ahead and add that person to the list. And if for whatever reason that doesn't work, like maybe we haven't instantiated the people object, sort of an impossible possibility, but we'll go ahead and return bad request again. And otherwise, we're going to return okay. So real quickly, clear out my breakpoints. I'm going to shrink the code, put a breakpoint there. I'm going to put a breakpoint there. And I'm going to put a breakpoint there. Okay, and then I'm going to run this again. Oh, it's already running. So I will refresh this. And you'll see the first thing we do is we go into get. Because we're going to get everybody back. We'll get everybody back. And that happens after the page loads and the jQuery fires to fill up this area right here. Actually try. No, I can't catch it. Kind of a dumb idea anyway. So what I'll do here is he calls himself a fighter. So we'll go ahead and put Steven Seagal in there. I probably spelled his name wrong. We'll just call him Steven Seagal. All right. And now I'm going to click save. And you see where we went? We went to post. We went to post because we're making an HTTP post call. It's the default behavior. Now you see why you'd want to have multiple controllers to do different things, like for people and for person and for fighter and for athlete or for whatever. You want to give people different URLs to go to. So you'll see that I've just posted a person. You see that it implies the ID, the default ID is 0, and then it passes me the name. Now if I added other properties there, they're all going to come back. As long as you supply them in your HTTP post parameters, you're going to get them all right here on this guy. It's like automatic deserialization back into an object format. And I'll step through the code. We add the person. We return OK. And then it calls get again whenever it's done, and you get that list. So I stepped through apparently too quickly. See there? The post happened, and then the get's going to happen. See how there's nobody there yet? What I'll do is, shoot, sorry guys. My alt-tab behavior is not as good as it could be today, apparently. And it's frozen because it's waiting for the response to happen. If I did this, I'm running out of fighters now. Jet Li, good one. Is that right? Or is it L-E-E? Is that good? L-E? Post? Oh. There you go. F5. There we go. I apparently can't fake it out that quickly. There we go. Anyone else? Mel Gibson. He's a fighter with his mouth. Got a dirty mouth. And of course, it's not going to let me pull that up. So I can't fake this demo. Oh, well. So you guys see, now we've written a readable, writable API. We've gotten data from the server, and we've sent data up to the server. You've done that using clean HTTP calls. You've done that in a way that doesn't necessarily obfuscate the the functionality of HTTP, but rather complements it. Okay? And I'm not on the slide deck. Cool. And we've seen this, so I'll just skip through. But you got the idea? We get a 1-1, 200 if we work. Posted data. Okay. Supporting HTML file upload. Why on earth would you want to do that? Maybe you want to take a picture with your phone and use my API to upload the picture. Does that make sense? Maybe I want to use HTTP just to post data. Okay. Here's how we do that. There's three parts, and these are all built in, and I admit they're a little squirrely when you first see them, and the process that it goes through is a little squirrely when you first see it walk through it. That's why I'm going to walk through it with you. The first one is MOM multi-part content? It checks to see if it's multi-part, which means is there a possibility that I have any files in this post? Okay. Second one, multi-part form data stream provider. It's going to parse the stream coming into the server. It's going to basically take a peek at the files that are being posted. And finally, body part file names. It will return the list of files sent in the stream. Okay. And I won't make you look at the code. I'll just run the code. So we've got this upload controller over here. And you'll see that I'm hard coding, and again, that does inherit from API controller. You'll see that I'm hard coding a path to C uploads, which probably has files in it, so we'll clear that. And just like before, we're just calling it post. Why didn't you put this in your person controller? Because it's called post. And it's for uploads. Yes, it might be for uploading pictures of persons, but we want to make everything separate. Why? Because you might work on a team. You don't want to lock a file, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, just separating concerns. Now, what I'm doing here is creating a list of strings. In this case, I'm only going to allow you the ability to upload one file at a time. So that list of strings is going to have one entry in it once I'm done. I've got a list of strings. Now, what I have to do first is to check request.content is MOM multi-part content. So am I getting data in files back from the client? Somebody posting files to me in MOM type. Then I create this class, and I pass it that path from above. The idea is, I'm going to take a stream that I get from the client, and I'm going to put it somewhere. So I have to tell it the base directory that I want it to put everything in. In this case, C uploads. Then you read each one asynchronously, and this is important. See how I'm also returning an async task here? You need to do it that way when you're uploading data. Why would you want to do it asynchronously? Because it might take a while. You might be uploading multiple files, and you don't want to lock your server. So that's why we're going to do asynchronous calls. Not necessarily to free up the client, but more or less to allow the server resources to recycle themselves more cleanly. Make sense? That's why we're going to do this call in an asynchronous fashion. And then right here, sorry about the going off the screen. I create a dictionary of string of strings to give me the list of files that got uploaded. And then I'm going to iterate through those and basically just return the name of the file back to the client. Okay? I'm going to return that file back to the client. So we're uploading using web API. Maybe. On a good day. And that's not to say that web API might break, just to say that my code might break. So what I'll do here, I was talking about surfing earlier today, so I got to thinking about it. Okay. Now, note my back and forward buttons are still as they were when this browser launched. That did not do a post and full reload of that page. That just did a post over web API. And you'll see what I've got down here. It's saying, hey, I got a response I don't really know what to do with. Let me tell you what that means. If you begin to work with web API and you start to return JSON data back to the client, Internet Explorer will not automatically render the JSON data for you just in the browser. Other browsers will. I don't really know why. I personally hope that 10 will, or that maybe there's an extension that I can add in somewhere that will like do a JSON display in the browser for me. But the default behavior is, hey, I don't know what kind of data this is because I came out and JSON wasn't popular at the time or whatever. So I'm not going to just render it for you because it could be dangerous. It's IE just being super protective. So what it's doing is it's saying, do you want to download this JSON file? No. I want to open up the network browser again, or Fiddler if I'm picky, and actually see what's going on. So what we'll do here is make my browser just a little bit larger. And again, go to the network area and do start capturing. And I'll select a different picture, upload a picture in NuGet, click upload, and you'll see this file pops up again because it knows that I'm getting back JSON. It doesn't know what to do with it. But there's our request, sniffed in the browser. It goes to API upload, just as we expected. When I double click on it to go into the detail view, you're going to see that it was a post. You're going to see that I posted a lot of data to it. When you look right here, you're going to see that I posted a file from that folder in that directory, C users Brady G pictures NuGet underscore trans dot gif. And it's going to show you some other stuff. It's also kind of showing you how, yes, you did just upload binary file data, but I know you don't want to look at it, so I'm just going to not show it to you. I mean, maybe if you wanted to look at the hex, there's a way you could turn that on, but then I'd have other questions for you. Okay. Like, don't you think you're being a little obsessive? So I just want to point that out, that we did upload the file and that the name of the file was uploaded file. That's actually the name of the file input box right there in my HTML thing. And then there's the file name. Now, when I go into the response body, that's where it saved it. Is that necessarily a recommendation I'm making to you? No, I'm just showing you this so that you see what gets returned during the process. I want you to see what's happening here. All right, and just to show you that it went up, there it is. One last demo of that one running. And this time I'll step through. Okay. And I'll go ahead and start the network sniffer. Oh, and I'll get that open. Now I'll select this other wave. I'll do an upload. We'll get that in. And then there's our path going to C uploads. There's our stream. If I were to look at that, body part file names are none yet. Go to here. Body part file names. I have one. You'll see that that is the name of the file that just got uploaded and where it got uploaded to. That's what happens when you provide it, when you use this guy and this guy together. If I were to iterate over that, you'll see that what it's returning is the name of the file saved to the server. And approve that again. C uploads wave1.jpg. And then there it is. Pretty neat, huh? So now you can write an application on your Windows phone or your Java phone, or any phone that supports HTTP GET and POST. God help me if you have a phone that doesn't support that. But if you have a phone that supports that or a device that supports that, you could upload files using web API. Is that pretty groovy? Anybody dig that? I'll ask it in reverse. Does anybody not dig that? Okay. I thought it was pretty handy. Okay. There's the code again. And just to rehash, That's what happens when we do the upload. We had no items, and then we have one. There's our demo, HTML file upload. So Web API is a part of ASP.NET MVC. Oh, do I have any questions after the file upload? Any questions at all? Okay. Web API is a part. Go. Part. The client-side code? Okay. I didn't show you that, did I? My bad. It's basically just that. It's basically just the post. By that token, you would think that it should have gone back and forth, but it didn't. So it just does the post directly to the API. Let me run it and see if it does anything tweaky that we don't know about. I don't think it does. Doesn't look like it. Maybe this is something. But the client code is just what you would expect your client code to be. I'm not doing a post. I'm not doing a post using jQuery, if that's what you were hunting for. That is definitely above my pay grade. So I was not doing that. I have tried. So I can point that out, that I have indeed tried. Any other questions? Sorry, I missed that one. Go ahead.
I was looking at your code, and when you serialize, how do you know, does the post know you need an ID?
The post does not know that I need an ID. If I were to rerun that again, the question was, when you do your post, how does the post know that I need an ID? And I think that you're asking that question because I don't have an ID box here. All right. What I'll do here is open this up, go in the sniffer, and I'll pick Scott Hanselman. He is a fighter, by the way. Pick Scott, send it up the wire. And now what I'll do is I'll go to the post, and I'll look at the request body. I'm not sending an ID. See there? I'm not sending that at all. What's happening is, since I have said, let me look at the right controller. Home controller. Person controller. Since I have told you that I'm passing you a person, serialize, or I guess deserialize, any properties that I found that match parameters in the post call and infer everything else. So if I were to have date of birth, it's going to be the minimum date of birth. Like, what is it, 1/1/1900 or something like that? So you mean do that just to show you how that would work? So what we'll do is I'll go over here. It's actually a very good question. I'll go over here to, I'm running. Now I'll rerun this guy, putting a breakpoint on the post. That's weird. Okay, in this case, date of birth 11001, name test ID is 0. I'm going to increment the ID right there because I don't have any. And I think it just blew up. Somehow I did that. I did that impossibility that I told you about earlier. I guess by changing the structure of the person, which I didn't think that was possible. I guess it is. But back to this, because this is when we get really interesting. I don't have long, which is good because this isn't going to take long. We talked about how Web API is a part of MVC. But I want to point out that you can host it yourself. So if you have this need for an API and you want to do something like host it inside of its own EXE instead of NIS, you can do that. Starts to sound a little like WCF, right? little trippy, a little complicated. It's really, really not. Why would you want to do that? More granular control. You want to have some sort of funky logging going on that you think you can't do in a website, et cetera, et cetera. Also, no need for a web server. That's usually a good thing. How do you do this? The HTTP configuration object and the HTTP service host factory objects. That's what you need to take away from this. And I'll show you those in just a second with a demo. This is our demo. So I'll hurry up a little bit because I'm actually going over for the first time today. I've got a project that I'll go ahead and add to this solution. And that is going to be right here. Self-host server. And I want to show you, importantly, the references that you have to add, because there are a few if you want to do this yourself. One or two of those might not be absolutely necessary, but if you want to do this, you might have to add a couple of references. And the way that I figured that out was to just kind of look at an MVC site, look at the ones that were in there. Well, I know I don't need optimization, take that out. You know, so I just added them one by one until it all worked, until everything compiled. So that's what you do. And then I'll open up my program. And you'll see that the first thing I do is I set up an address. And I'm calling the HTTP self-host configuration. And in this guy, I'm configuring the route. So you see that looks just like before. Configuring that route. And then I am opening a call to the server, or I'm opening a call to the self-host controller and passing in that configuration. So I come up with a URL that I wanted to listen on. I create an instance of a configuration object. You always need configuration. I route it. Can't get around that. I do have to route it myself. But I've probably already got that code in some global ASAXES somewhere, so I can just pull it out. And then I create an instance of the self-hosting server and get started. And I'll show you real quickly the controller that I'm using here. So I've got environment status. I just want machine name and the time on the server. And then I've got an environment controller, again, that inherits from API controller. And then I'm just going to write some stuff out to the console and return a new environment status. Now, before, in those other examples, you saw that I was returning HTTP response message or something like that. Look at here. You'll see what I'm returning is not that. I am returning an instance of my custom model, even though I'm doing that inside of a controller action. That's interesting, huh? How many have used MVC? Remember, I think it was a pretty good number of hands. You know how you always have to return what? An action result or some variant of action result. With API controllers, you can return whatever you want or the HTTP status message thing. So what I'll do here is I'll copy this to my clipboard so I don't forget it. And I'm going to close down this because it likes to lock up keystrokes I like to use. And I'm just going to run this self-host server. So you'll see the server is running. Oh, that's not what I meant to do. That doesn't have a good network monitor in it. I'll do that. And then API, was it environment? I can't remember. Environment. Call the environment API. You see, we just did a get. I'll go into there, do a detailed view, and look at the response body. Of course, it's going to freak out on me. Oh, unable to save file. Well, that's weird. There we go. I don't know why I did that the first time. But you'll see that it's returning my machine name and the time on the server, just like we expected. It's returning a JSON version of that class that we just created. And I didn't have to use IIS to do this. I could host this in my little EXE. So imagine that you could take this and run a little EXE on your phone and run a web server on your phone and open up an API on your phone so people could call to your phone. That could be kind of neat. Also be kind of dangerous, kind of overkillish. But that's how you use Web API. That's an introduction to ASP.NET Web API. And this is the code we just walked through and how we do it. And configuring media type formatters, I already talked about this. I'll show a real quick example of it. We might want to tweak our XML JSON formatters. Let's say you don't care about JSON or you don't like JSON, which would be bad, and you only want to do XML. What we can do is we can turn off the JSON formatter. Out of the box, Web API will run with two, or run with the XML and the JSON. So they're both turned on. What I'll do now is I will go back into this guy, close this. Or let's say you have somebody that doesn't like having to view JSON files because they use IE and they haven't found that it has a network monitor yet. There's a host of reasons why you'd want to do this. And what I'll do is I'll just kind of tell you at a high level what this code does. It's kind of nasty. I should have probably made a custom formatter to show you kind of how to do that. But what I'm doing here is I'm saying go through the global configuration, all the formatters that you have in that, which are there are two. And what I want you to do is I want you to turn off the one, that second block of code, just beneath there. I want you to turn the JSON one off so that you will not output in JSON format, you will output in XML format. Because Brady told me that by default, out of the box, it runs with XML and with JSON. Okay. So what I'll do there is I'll run the example one more time. But this time, I'm just going to go right over here, type in API person. And I get back Chuck Norris, David Carradine, and Bruce Lee. Remember how I said that out of the box, it'll support OData so long as you return an iQueryable? Remember that? I'll cheat here. I just want number one. I want top one. Let's say I want the top one skipping the first one. I could do top one and skip the first one. So you see that URL format? That's OData in action. So if you liked OData before and you've wondered why it's kind of fallen by the wayside, it hasn't. We've just given you another way to do it that's a little bit easier. Just want to point that out. What did we learn today? Why web APIs are important. How to use ASP.NET Web API to build your own web APIs. How to configure one. How to upload HTML file, which is a very, very popular question. Enabling OData and other custom formats, or removing custom formats. And then how to, using the web API test client, which I did not use. I didn't take that out of there. If you worked in the WCF web API land for a little while, there was this test client that you could use. It was a special way of using like using query string variables. That's no longer in web API, ASP.NET web API. As far as I know, it's not. If it is, I don't know the URL. Matthew, is that's been deprecated, hasn't it? It's still there? Oh, okay. I don't know the URL format, so it's still there. I didn't know it was still there. What's the URL format look like? Item? You don't know? Okay. Well, that's good to know. All right. For more information, I could swear I heard it was out. But for more information, there's a Channel 9 show on it where Dan Roth talks about it. He's going to be doing another show where he talks about doing it in Visual Studio 11. He'll be talking about that later on. And I found this really awesome one where you can use Web API with MongoDB. So if you're like a MongoDB fan, There's a link out there that you could do this with. By the way, all these decks are available on the key fobs that have been going around the room. If you have one of those key fobs, go up to somebody and say, hey, have you been able to get the data yet? And if they say no, give them the key fob, because we wanted those to be shared. So, and then again, if you want to give us some feedback, you can go to, that's weird, that's copied from the build thing. You can go to our user voice, or you can use the forums.dev@windows.com. I would recommend user voice because it gets directly to us.